Okay, good morning, everybody. We discussed last time, Akedas Yitzchak, and we are now at Parshas Chayei Sarah. What I want to do today, I want to take an idea that goes all through the parasha. I'll mention a few things in the parasha, and then we'll find the common denominator of all of them. So Parashat Chayei Sarah speaks about a few people. The first one is Sarah, Abraham. We have Eliezer and Rivka. And we have also Lavan, Betuel, and the children of Keturah. These are more or less the people who are mentioned in this parasha. And I want to divide them into two groups. On one side, Abraham and Sarah, Eliezer and Rivka. And on the other side, Lavan and Betuel and the children of Keturah. And we'll see why we divided them. Obviously, there is an obvious reason for dividing them in this way, but I want to go more into the depths of what's the difference between those two groups and learn something from the comparison. When we speak about Sarah, the Torah discusses here the death of Sarah and her burial. But it starts with summing up her life. And the Torah says, it's a very famous posuk, Vayiyu chayei Sarah, and the life of Sarah was 100 years, ve'esrim shana, and 20 years, and ve'sheva shanim, and 7 years. And then the Torah repeats and says, Shnei chayei Sarah, the years of the life of Sarah. And all Meforshim deal with why is the repetition. And the life of Sarah was, in the beginning of the posuk, and the years of the life of Sarah at the end of the Pasuk. Obviously, it's a repetition. There are many explanations to it. I won't go into them. But there is one that is very beautiful, and this is the explanation of the Ktav and Kabbalah. And it tells us, Shnei Chayei Sarah, the years of the life of Sarah, the word Shnei is the years of. But the word Shnei can also be two. And he interprets it also as to be two. Of course, the Pshat, the simple level, is the years of the life of Sarah. But he interprets it also to say two. What does he refer to when he says two? In order to understand it, let's go a little bit into one or two things in the life of Sarah. Number two. Okay. We know that at a certain point, Sarah saw that she is childless. She knew that from Abraham, the Jewish nation is supposed to come. So she takes Hagar and she gives her as a wife to Abraham. The idea was that Hagar is better than any other woman. After all, she was the daughter of Paro who left the palace behind in order to join the household of Abraham. So obviously she had a level of greatness to her. And Sarah felt that maybe this could be the solution, being that she is not giving birth to a child. So Hagar should be the biological mother, but she, Sarah, will be the one to raise the child. And in this way, Abraham will be able to be the father of the Jewish nation. This was their idea. If we think about it, we know it didn't work out later, but there was room to think that it might work out, because Hagar was not a simple woman. Later on, we see that she's in the desert, she sees angels, a few, one after the other, she's not overwhelmed by it. She was not a simple woman. She was not Sarah in any way, right? But she was not a simple woman. So, it makes sense. But for Sarah to be the one to suggest it, one needs a tremendous greatness to be able to do it. It's not a simple thing when you are the wife of your husband to come and suggest, marry somebody else. And as we saw later on, there were problems. It's not so simple, right? Cherem de Rabbeinu Gershom forbade it because it's not so simple. Even though the Torah allows to marry two wives, we know it's not a practice. Because people have to be on an unbelievable level in order that it will work out and that life will be reasonable and possible. And Sarah, she is the one that suggests it to Abraham. How do we understand? Where is it coming from? How could Sarah do something like this? Says the Ketav in HaKabbalah the following. Here it is. Okay. He says, we are told by the term Shnei Chayei Sarah, the years of the life of Sarah, a very great thing about Sarah. And what is it? A human being, he explains, is a combination of a body and a soul. A body that is physical and a soul that is spiritual. And that's different than all other creatures. Angels have spirituality only, a soul only, and animals have a body only, right? But man, as he says, meyuad, is destined for double life. Life on a physical level, and life in a on a spiritual level. And that's shnei, two, double life. There is a life that is physical, and there is a life that is spiritual. And we have both. There are many things that we do that are physical. And obviously there are many things that we do and should do that are spiritual. But he says, the greatness of Sarah was that those two aspects of her life were one. What does it mean? Every human being has a focal point in his life. Something that its life, that his life is going around it. Everything leads towards it. That's what motivates him. Everything has to come from it and everything has to go there. What will be the focal point is the choice that a human being makes. And we can make any choice we want. We are free to choose. We have free choice. What we choose is up to us. But we can never choose more than one focal point. Even though we have two aspects to us, and we have two lives, a physical life and a spiritual life, but the heart cannot be divided into two. Meaning, in terms of what's inside us, what's our focal point, what's the essence of our life, where is our lifeline, what is our lifeline, what motivates us, what is the purpose of all that we are doing, this is either one or the other. The heart cannot have the two of them together. And we learn it from the Pasuk. Ve'ahavta et Hashem Elokecha, בכל לבבך, with all your heart. You cannot have two opposite things in your heart and love both. Okay? Or love both equally. That's impossible. And it's up to us which focal point we choose. Now, most of us have physical desires and also spiritual desires. So doesn't it contradict what we just said? The question is, what is dominant? Where is really the focal point of our life? Yes, a person can have the focal point in life, Torah, spirituality, ruchnias, right? And at the same time have some desires for physicality. But that's an indication that there is a lack still in his desire for spirituality, and that's why it's meanwhile a mixture. And most human beings are somewhere in the mixture, but it's not equal. There is one that is dominant and one that is secondary. Sarah is described as Shnei Chayei Sarah. Her life was the combination of the two. The essence of her life was the combination of the two, and she created unity between them. There was no two loves in her heart. She had only one love. Now, how does it express itself in reality? Let's go back to the story. When a regular Jew decides to get married, obviously, he wants to get married because that's the right thing to do. That's a mitzvah in the Torah. But there is also the human interest in marriage. And that's how Hashem created us. We want companionship, we want sharing responsibilities, and so on and so on and so on. We want children, and that's our way to have it, and so on and so on. It could be many other things besides the understanding, right, that this is the will of Hashem and this is what he wants in life. For Sarah, all other aspects that are human and are okay to have did not matter. What mattered to her was one thing. What is the will of Hashem? The will of Hashem is a Jewish nation. So, from whatever reasons that Hashem decided upon, I am not in the picture. So, I have to do whatever I can to make it happen. And she had no problem to take Hagar and bring her to Abraham. Didn't she understand that it can create difficulties? Of course it could. She was ready to live with them and deal with them because she had another thing in mind. She wanted to bring the Jewish nation into existence, what is an unbelievable level, way, way beyond what we can comprehend, right? But that's what Sarah was. And that's the term, Shnei Chayei Sarah. It was two aspects of one coin for her. There was no division between the physical and the spiritual. In terms of her heart, she wanted one thing only, what HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants. And if he wants Klal Yisrael from Avram, and from whatever reason he doesn't want me in the picture, even if I want to be part of the picture, I'll do what I can on my own account in order that it will happen. And that's only one example of many, many, many others in the life of Sarah. I won't go into other examples in the life of Sarah, because I want to go to the other people in the parasha and show other examples for it. The other person in the parsha is, of course, Avraham Avinu. Right? In fact, the parsha starts after Sarah is not alive anymore. So all we hear about Sarah in this parsha of Chayei Sarah is her burial, sum up of her life and the story of her burial. But Avraham is still acting. So let's see what the Torah tells us about Avraham in this story. So we are told that Sarah died in Kiryat Arba'i Hebron Be'eretz Knan, in the land of Knan in Hebron, and it's written, Vayavo Avraham. Avraham came, lispod leSarah velivkotah, to eulogize Sarah and to cry over her. Where did he come from? Avraham eulogized Sarah, cried over Sarah. What's the Vayavo? Avraham was not there when Sarah died. Avraham was on his way back from Akedat Yitzchak. He was not home. He comes home and he learns that Sarah is not there anymore. Now let's think in what moment in his life it was. He was going to sacrifice Yitzchak as an offering. He's coming back. The mission was accomplished and Yitzchak is still alive. What is an unbelievable thing that most probably would like to share with Sarah, right? Also, at the end of the last parsha, Rashi tells us that Hashem revealed to Avraham that the wife of Yitzchak is already born and ready. Right? So here the future is in front of them after all the suffering, all the tests. The 10 tests is over. Now it's time for Naches, right? He comes home and Sarah is not there. That's not an easy moment. What comes right after it? He has to find a burial place for her. And what he wants, as we all know, is Me'arat HaMachpelah, the particular place in Hebron that is fit for the burial of Sarah. And we know that the Perek speaks, the chapter speaks about a whole negotiation, long negotiation, between the children of Chet, Ephron, who owed the place, and the whole town was involved, the children of Chet were involved, a whole long negotiation, till he got this piece of land and had to pay a very, very high, unreasonable price for this piece of land. At a time like this, it's not so easy to do these negotiations and face this resistance on their side to sell and have to calculate what to say, how to say in order to get it. Add to it the fact that Abraham was promised the land. It's his land. Hashem told him it's your land, right? And all he needs is a small little cave to bury Sarah and see what he has to go through for it. So it's another test. He just came back from Agedat Yitzchak. Just Sarah is in front of him dead, just discovered it, right? Just has to go through all this negotiation, and he has in the back of his mind, but that's my land, Hashem said it's mine. Okay, Abraham is Abraham, obviously, and he goes ahead and does whatever he has to do, and he does not complain. Great enough, right? The Torah, in one word, reveals to us a whole other aspect of the greatness of Abraham. It's written, Vayakom Abraham me'al pnei meito. Abraham rose, got up, right? He was in front of Sarah crying, eulogizing, right? And then he got up in order to speak to the children of Chet. Why do we need to hear that he got up? Of course, right? Either it's anyhow so if he has to go from one place to the other, and even if it's not, why do we need to know about it? So obviously we learn from here something. Rabbi Yerucham Leibovich of Mir explains here something very, very beautiful. He says as follows. Avram just cried and eulogized Sarah. Now he has to go to talk to the children of Chet. There is something that he does in between. He gets up from the place that he sits in front of the dead. What does it mean? Says Rabbi Yerucham Mimir, he washed his face, he put himself together, he came down, and he went to speak to them as if he has no problem in front of him. Under such difficult circumstances. He's going to speak to people. The fact that he's in trouble doesn't have to affect them. You speak to other people, you have to speak in a pleasant way. So he got up from this situation. He left this situation for a moment behind him and went to negotiate with him as if nothing happened. Again, it's a greatness that is beyond description. And our question is, how could one do it? Right? It's beyond human capacity, seems to be. Right? How could Abraham do something like this? The answer is the same answer that we saw by Sarah. When the focal point in life is what does HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants, and a person lives for this reason, then it doesn't matter where he is, what's going on inside him, what's going on around him. He's focused on one thing. What does Hashem want from me at this moment? And he will take any opportunity possible in order to make sure that Hashem is happy with what he's doing. He lives for giving nachat to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And if this is the focal point, if this is where the heart is, then it's possible. And of course, there are endless levels of desire that HaKadosh Baruch Hu will have nachat from us. Avraham Avinu was at the top. Sarai Meinu was at the top of the ladder. For them, this was the only one thing that matters. And that's why, under any circumstances, they were able to go beyond the moment, to go beyond their own inner turmoil, and do whatever is necessary and right to do at the moment. I want to show another point about Abraham that I think is also Rabbi Yerucham of Mir, and it makes the point even stronger. There is a very interesting discussion here between Abraham and the children of Chet. And in fact, the name of the children of Chet is mentioned here 8 times, and the Torah mentions it in 2 other places again. And Chazal tell us that Bnei Chet had the merit to be mentioned in Torah 10 times because of the fact that they had Abraham in purchasing the piece of land from Ephron. Ephron was not so keen on selling it. Abraham used Bnei Chet as those who will negotiate with Ephron and be in between him and Ephron. And in this way he got the Me'ara. So Chazal Chazal says that the Torah mentions them 10 times in order to tell us that whoever helps a tzaddik to get what he wants to get, it's as if he kept the 10 dibros, the 10 commandments. And that's why it's 10 times. But it's a very bewildering Chazal. To that extent, what's going on here? We'll come back to it later, but being that they were there to help Abraham, we have a whole negotiation between them, a negotiation process between them and Abraham Avinu. And we see from it that they have tremendous respect towards Abraham Avinu. And that's why they helped him. And I'll give some proofs to it. They tell him, Shmaenu Adoni, listen to us, our master. They call him master. They call him Nesi Elokim Ata Betochenu. You are a prince of God in the midst of us. Such a respect towards Abraham. It's written, so the Torah itself proves that they had unbelievable respect towards Avraham Avinu. And we find that Avraham Avinu also dealt with them with great respect. For example, it's written later on that he bowed down to them. It's written twice. That he bowed down to them in gratitude. And also, Avraham Avinu dealt with everybody like a creature that is created in Tzelem Elohim, in the godly image, and he gave respect to every human being. But when we compare the way they treated him and the way he treated them, we see one difference. They call him Adoni, our master. He does not call them Adoni. The concept of you are my master, even though it's a common way to approach people, right? Master, right, in Hebrew, Adoni, as we say Giveret, we say Adoni. Right? That's the common way to approach. Avraham Avinu would call this name only to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. To him there was one master, Hashem only. And he was unable to call a human being my master. He will give respect, he'll bow down, he'll speak very nicely, he'll wash his face before. But to him there is one master. And in fact, the second insight explains the first. How could Avraham Avinu be so in control of his emotions, of his difficulties, and behave in such a way at such a difficult moment? Because he had one master. Because to him, HaKadosh Baruch Hu was the central point of life. And whatever Hashem wants, this is what he wanted. And being that this was the case, he saw in every situation, even the most difficult, an opportunity to accomplish something. In fact, the Malbim explains that one of the reasons that we have such a long discussion of the burial of Sarah is because Avraham Avinu wanted to take this opportunity in order to teach people about the fact that there is life after life. Okay, so he was willing to give a lot of money. He made the point, this is the exact place I want. If one doesn't believe in the world after, right, it doesn't matter where the person is buried. Then you bury the person for your sake. Right, you bury the person so, you know, he won't remain there and rot in front of you. Right? For health reasons, whatever it will be. But if one believes in life after life, it matters very much where we are buried, and it's worthwhile to pay so much money for the piece of land. So, as we see, Sarah, Abraham had one love in their heart, and this is the love of Hashem. And everything else was in this framework. And this gave them the strength and the ability to do things, even at difficult times, the way Hashem would be proud of. Let's go further. The next story is Eliezer. Eliezer was sent by Abraham to find a wife for Yitzhak. Fine, he's the servant of Abraham. Abraham is the one to assign jobs to him, because that's the definition of an eved. Of a slave according to the Torah. A slave according to the Torah is not a person who is treated like we see in slavery out there. A slave has to be treated better than the master himself at times. If you have only one pillow, you have to give it to your slave and not take it for yourself. So here the slave is treated even better than you if you have only one, right? So a slave is a person who is treated very, very well. So what makes him a slave? That he is dependent on you. You decide what will be his schedule for the day. And he has to follow whatever you decide for him. So Eliezer is a slave, and Abraham assigns him to a mission, and obviously, being a slave, he has to go and do the mission, and he does. But when we look how he does the mission, we see that it's not just doing what my master told me to do. He invests of himself in a way that he was not demanded to. He doesn't, for example, prays that he'll be successful in the mission. That's not his job. But again, Eliezer was there, and he learned it in the house of Abraham, obviously, in order to do what's right. If a person has the focal point, if his focal point in life is to do what's right, what Hashem wants, so obviously he'll go the extra mile. Because for what we love, we do more than what we must. If I'm an employee, I'll do my work. But will I put 5 more hours without pay? Not likely. Maybe once, but not on a steady basis. But if it's my own business, it's a different story. Right? So for Eliezer, for Sarah, for Abraham, Hashem's business, quotes on quotes, was their business. And being that this was the case, we see that they are able of doing things that other people might not be able to do. Let's go further. So we had Abraham, Sarah, Eliezer, and obviously the fourth one is Rivka, with the very famous story of going many extra miles back and forth, up and down, in order to give Eliezer and the camels to drink. And from the same very reason, right? Because what Hashem wants in this world was her will. Why did Hashem create the world? What does Hashem want in this world? He created it for one reason. Because he wants to give. Hashem wants to give. And that's why he created the world. Of course, he doesn't need to want to give. But in his kindness, he created the world in order to give. So the whole purpose of creation is giving. Hashem's giving to us. If Hashem's business is your business, your natural conclusion should be, so I want to give. Right? So to speak, I want to be a partner with Hashem in his purpose in life. In his purpose of building the world, I'm sorry. Right? So if the purpose of creation is to give, obviously she wanted to give because Hashem's agenda and her agenda were one and the same. So we see here 4 people that are discussed in this parsha of Chayei Sarah, that their heart is totally directed in one direction, the will of Hashem. On the other hand, we have a few other people in the parsha. We have Lavan, we have Betuel, we have the mother of Rivka, and we have the children of Keturah. What do we hear about them? So let's see what's the first time when we hear about Lavan. Eliezer comes to Haran, he finds Rivka, and now he's invited home. How did it happen? So in Perek Avdalet Posuk Avchet, 24-28, it's written, Vataro Tzaneara, the young girl, Rivka, ran, Vataged Leveit Ima, and she told in her mother's family, she told at home, Kadvarim Ha'ele, she said what took place, right? Ule Rivka Ach, and Rivka has a brother, Ushmo Lavan. And his name was Lavan. That's the first time we hear about him. Vayarotz Lavan el ha'ish achutza el ha'ayin. And he ran out to the person who stood outside by the well. Vayehi, and it was, כראות את הנזם ואת הצמידים על ידי אחותו, when he saw the jewelry on the hand of his sister that were given to her by Eliezer, וכשומעו את דברי רבקה אחותו, and when he heard what רבקה told him about this man, and she told him that where he is, so in פסוק ל"ד, 41, what do we hear? ויאמר, and he says, בוא ברוך השם, come the one who is blessed by God. למה תעמוד בחוץ? Why should you stand outside? ואני פיניתי הבית, I cleared out the house, ומקום לגמלים, and I made even a space for the camels. That's very bewildering, this פסוק. Who are we talking about? לבן. How does he welcome Eliezer? Come, the one who is blessed by God. Why do you stand outside? I made room. Looks like Avram Avinu, doesn't it? But we know it's Lavan, right? And the Torah tells us exactly where it came from. Vayei kirot et hanezem ve et hatzmidim al yedei achoto. He saw the jewelry. It's to that extent. It's written, Vanochi piniti habayit. I cleaned out the place. Okay? So we are told, I cleaned up the place. Says Rashi, מעבודת כוכבים. He took out the idols. Isn't it fascinating? Even this is ready to do for the jewelry. It's unbelievable. Unbelievable. This is the exact opposite of what we saw up till now. As we said, a person can have one focal point in his heart. The main thing is one thing. We cannot have a desire for jewelry and a desire for a God on the same level. We can have a combination, but one will always be dominant. And the ideal is that one will take over. And obviously the one that should take over is Hashem, right? Is spirituality. Because this is what lasts. This is what is eternal. This is what's real. Everything else is temporary. It's only a tool for something else. But we have free choice. HaKadosh Baruch Hu created us in such a way that we can make any choice we want. And while Avraham and Sarah, Eliezer and Rivka, chose the focal point of Hashem, it's obvious that Lavan chose the focal point of joy, of physical joy, physical pleasure, money, jewelry. To that extent, that his God is used in order to get jewelry. Is God makes room for jewelry. What makes it clear and obvious that what is dominant is money. Yeah, a person needs a God too. It's helpful. That's the type of God of Lavan. It's a God that is helpful. Like, you need to blame somebody sometimes. There is a God to blame. You need to excuse what you do. You put it on your God. That's why they have many gods. Those people who don't want to accept Hashem accept many gods. Because when you accept many gods, there is a God of peace and there is a God of war. When you want to fight, this is your God. And when you want to have peace, this is your God. And there is no problem to go from one to the other. Because it's not the only thing. It's one thing that is secondary to something that is essential. And what is essential to Lavan is his success in this world, money or many other things like this. And he is easily putting aside his God when it comes to money. Not only putting aside his God, but using his God for the sake of money. A current example is obviously the Arabs, who will say Allah Akbar in order to get whatever they want to get, in order to kill, in order to steal, in order to do whatever comes to their mind. right? And they terrorize the whole world in the name of their God, right? That's basically Lavan. These people are focused on one thing only, what's good for me. And everything else, including Hashem, is used for it. Beautiful. Beautiful. Okay. That during the golden calf, women chose Hashem over jewelry. Right. Okay. Very nice. Let's go further. So that's Lavan. Okay. The exact opposite of the people we saw before. Two opposites, and it must be two opposites. Now, when we are in a mixture, what most people are, because who is Avraham Avinu, Sarai, Imenu, Eliezer, and Rivka, right? We are all a mixture. If we want to know where are we have to look at the time of a test. What do we give for what? To what extent do we give for what? As we said, we are not perfect, and Hashem does not demand from us perfection. We are in a process of making HaKadosh Baruch Hu the essence of our life. And it's okay. We were given 120 years, and even then, lo alecha amlacha ligmor, we don't have to finish. We have to work on it. But if I want to check where am I, and I want to know where to work, I have to see what do I put aside for what and to what extent. That's basically the point. That's why the Torah tells us when he saw the Nezem and the Tzmidim, when his goal was in front of him. Here is the jewelry. See, this person is very rich. There is an opportunity here. Right? Then you can see what is put aside. So that's a way to check ourselves. Now, let's go further. Lavan and Betuel and the mother, they're all against sending Rivka to the house of Abraham. They fought it. In the process, Betuel died, as Rashi tells us. They tried to put poison, thank you, in the cup of Eliezer, and in this way get out of it. They were doing everything possible to prevent it. Because to them, what Abraham, Sarah, Yitzchak, and Eliezer, and all the rest in the list that belong in this list, symbolized, is the anti-idea, the antithesis of what they are all about. They could not live with it. Because if your focal point in life is money and you'll do everything for money, you cannot relate to a person that can give up money and say, "Im ekach michut ve'atzroch na'al," to the king of Sodom, "I'm not going to take even a shoelace from you in order that the people won't say that you made me rich," when the money really belonged to Abraham because he went to the war, he brought it back. Okay? They can't relate to it. To them it's dangerous. It's the conscience that doesn't let them be happy with the way they are. And every human being is a conscience because after all there is a Tzelem Elohim. But they put it to sleep. And the very existence of people who behave differently doesn't let them put it to sleep. And that's why they cannot take it. Now, understanding this will explain to us another story at the end of the parasha. At the end of the parasha, the Torah says as follows. Vayosef Avraham, vayikach isha ushma ketura. After the death of Sarah, it's Perek Hafei, Avraham took another wife, ketura. And we are told that ketura is Hagar. He took Agar again as a wife. And she bore Zimran, Yokshan, Medan, Midian, many children. Two psukim of names of nations, three, that came from her. And then the Torah tells us, Vayiten Avraham et kol asher lo leYitzchak. Avraham gave everything that he possessed to Yitzchak. And then we are told, ולבני הפילגשים אשר לאברהם, to the children of Keturah, the פילגש, נתן אברהם מתנות, אברהם gave gifts, וישלחם מעל יצחק בנו בעודנו חי, and he sent them away that they won't be together with יצחק, while אברהם was still alive, he did it, Kedma el Eretz Kedem, to the east. Now, it's very difficult to understand, because it's written that he gave everything to Yitzhak. So if he gave everything to Yitzhak, what else can he give to the children of the Pilakshim? If you give everything, you don't have anything anymore. Right? So what did he give to Yitzhak, and what did he give to them? Right? More than this, why did he send them away? Why did he separate them from Yitzhak? We find another separation among the children of Abraham at the lifetime of Sarah, the famous separation between Ishmael and Yitzhak. Why does the Torah tell it to us about Ishmael and Yitzhak and here? It's basically part of the story of choosing Klal Yisrael from among all nations. Right? That's the story of Abraham, if you think about it. Right? Till Abraham, every human being had equal opportunity and was in potential at the same place. They could become those who will bring the world to purpose, everybody. With Abraham, there is a division. Being that mankind did not bring the world to purpose and was not interested in bringing the world to purpose, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Hashem, chose Abraham and his children and assigned them to be those who will bring the world to purpose and change their essence so they'll be able to do so. And that's where the division between Jews and non-Jews takes place. But it's a long process. It starts with Abraham, and it ends at the time of the giving of the Torah. And we hear on many different stages all along the way of separation. Rabbi Yehuda Halevi calls it klipa velev, like the heart and soul, the main, and the shell that is around it. Why is this the imagery that he uses? If the rest of mankind is not fulfilling the purpose, Hashem could have destroyed them and just left the Jewish people. Life for us would have been much easier in this way. Right? We wouldn't have to suffer from all the nations, go to exile, be exposed to their influences, have to rectify it, and so on and so on and so on. But the same way that when we have a fruit, we have a fruit and we have a shell, and the shell is necessary. The same way, we need the other nations as well for the fulfillment of our purpose. It's like a shell, something that is there for the purpose of the fruit. They are here for our purpose. On a simple level, they are here to develop the world on the physical level, so we won't have to be immersed in physicality constantly. And we can enjoy the fruits of their labor, of course for money, we are not taking it away without it, right? But let's say they discover things in the physical realm of life, and we utilize it to serve Hashem, right? So they will develop the physical aspect of creation, and we'll be able to dedicate ourselves to spirituality. That's the ideal reality. But as we know, they don't always choose to do just this, right? They don't make the right choices in terms of the relationship with Hashem, and they don't necessarily keep the seven mitzvot of Bnei Noach. They don't necessarily accept Hashem altogether, right? It's for our benefit that they are here, and we will eventually, through a long process, bring them there. Because this makes our mission much broader and gives us an opportunity to do the will of Hashem much more than if it would have been just us. Because we have a dual purpose. A, to bring ourselves to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and then to bring them to Hashem. By being a role model, or by our interactions with them, whatever way it will be, this time will bring all of them to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So they are necessary. They are there. We have Ishmael, and we have the children of Keturah, and we'll have later on the children of Esav. And they are all necessary, and will, on an ongoing basis, all through history, have encounters with them. Because they are part of our mission. But the Torah makes very clear what is our role in creation, and what's their role in creation. So basically, Avram gave everything to Yitzhak. Meaning, in other words, is legacy, is spiritual inheritance, and also physical things, right? All his money, Avram gave to Yitzhak. What means, in other words, it's clear to Avram, and the Torah makes it clear to us, that Yitzhak is the continuity of Abraham. That he is the chosen, that he is the one, that he is focused on the purpose, and he is the one that is supposed to create, to bring the world to purpose. At the same time, there are other people too, and they have a job too. And as we define the job, to develop the world on a physical level. Now, if they do it in the proper way, they fulfill their purpose. It's not our purpose, it's a very different level of purpose, but they fulfill their purpose, and even a non-Jew can have Olam Haba. But there will be a major difference between them and between us. Being that they chose not to be part of the purpose, they are assigned to a job in the physical realm of life. What this means is that their realm of existence and realm of function is in the realm of the physical reality, what means they are under nature. The way Hashem governs them is by the laws of nature. And they cannot surpass this framework. While, by Klal Yisrael, even though we live, obviously, in a physical reality, and externally, we do the same things in many ways that non-Jewish people do. We eat, and we sleep, and we get dressed, and we go to work, and so on and so on. But we are not governed by nature. What means, in other words, what Hashem enables us to do by giving us a Jewish soul, and what he demands from us to do, is to focus on ruchnias, to focus on spirituality. And spirituality is unlimited. And being that spirituality is unlimited, we are not under the laws of nature. And that's why, for example, our history is totally different than the history of any other nation. The rules, the laws of nature do not apply to our history. And we know that there are individuals of Klal Yisrael who had control over nature and still have control over nature. Where is it coming from? It's coming from the fact that we are assigned to focus on Ruchnias. This is supposed to be our focal point. The moment that we focus on Ruchnias, and this is what our life is all about, we transcend nature in our behavior. What Avraham, Sarah, Rivka, Eliezer did, and people like them, is going against human nature. That's how we described it before. How could Avraham, at the moment that is so difficult, be so smiley and nice and pleasant in his discussion with Nechet? What would have been so wrong if he would have cried a little bit while speaking to them? It would have been very good for everybody else, not for Avraham Avinu. That's superhuman. Where is it taken from? It's taken from the fact that Hashem gave us, Klal Yisrael, the capacity and the job to focus on Ruchnias only, and Ruchnias is unlimited. There is no end. And we get a feeling of this no end when we read really about great people. Our great people, right? Jewish great people. Many times we hear stories and we say, that's an angel. And I want to change the sentence. It's more than an angel, because they have a body. But we see people who are capable of doing it. And that's why the laws of nature do not apply to us, because Hashem deals with us the way we deal with him. More than this. Originally, why were the laws of nature created? Why did Hashem create physicality altogether? He created physicality in order to hide himself. And by this, enable us to have free choice. In a reality that is spiritual only, like the reality of the angels, everything is so clear and so obvious that there is no choice, and the good things are done because there is no other way. It doesn't even come to mind to do anything different because it's so clear and so obvious. The creation of physicality hides Hashem, means creates confusion, takes away the clarity. And if we are not clear, then obviously we can make mistakes too, right? So physicality is the barrier between us and between Hashem. If a person is capable of focusing on spirituality only, the barrier is put aside. And that's basically the job of a Jew. And that's why we are required to be holy. An un-Jew is not required to be holy. Let's define holiness. What is holiness? Holiness by us is not separating from the physical. Holiness by us is using the physical for the service of Hashem. Eating because we need the strength to serve Hashem. Eating because it's an opportunity to make a broche. Eating because this will bring us to have gratitude towards Hashem. And so on and so on and so on, and there are endless levels there. Right? And that's true for any physical action. That's something that is demanded only from us. Non-Jewish people don't have the capacity for it. When Hashem defined us, he defined us as Am Kadosh. Atem Tiyuli, Mamlechet Kohanim, the Goy Kadosh, a holy nation. That's only our capacity. Understanding this, we can now understand the story of Abraham giving gifts to Yitzchak vis-a-vis the other people. What did Abraham give to Yitzchak? He gave him everything. What is everything? The real reality. Ruchnias is everything. Right? That's everything. And he gave him money too. But money by Yitzchak and Abraham was Ruchnias. So it's included in the everything. What did he give the children of Keturah? Chazal say, I think Rashi quotes it too. Yeah? Rashi says, Pershu Rabotenu, our sages explained about the gift that he gave to the children of Keturah, Shem Tum'ah Masar Lahem. He gave them a name of Hashem that has to do with impurity. Very difficult to understand. What does it mean, a name of Hashem that is impure, Shem Tum'ah? The Malbim explains it very beautifully. And the Malbim says the following. I'm adding something to the explanation before the Malbim, because otherwise we won't understand the Malbim. What is the name of Hashem? A name of Hashem is a way he deals with this world. In general, in the Torah, a name is essence. Like if Abraham was called Abraham, the name Abraham defines who Abraham was. Sarah was called Sarah, he defines her essence, and that's why at a certain point Hashem changed their name, because their essence changed. But when it comes to Hashem, obviously we don't know Hashem's essence. So we cannot give a name that will say who Hashem is. The names describe ways that he deals with this world. And there are two ways that Hashem deals with this world. General ways. There are many names of Hashem, but two general ways that Hashem deals with this world. One is Bederech HaTeva, according to the laws of nature, and one is the way he chooses to, what we will call Ashgacha Pratit, individual divine providence. What's the difference between them? One is a way to regulate reality and hide him. Like the sun rises at that time here, and in another place at a different time, it can be pre-predicted. That's nature. If this and this happens, rain will fall, and so on and so on. These are the laws of nature. You wire the wires properly, you'll get electricity. This hides Hashem. Because if each time that I put the wires a certain way, I get electricity, I might look at it as cause and effect and forget the first cause. Okay, that's the meaning of Shem Shel Tum'ah. Shem Shel Tum'ah means the Derech HaTeva. And Derech HaTeva is governed by spiritual forces that Hashem assigned to it, what we call Malochim. There is an angel to every nation. There are different angels. We speak about the angel of fire, the angel of water, if you remember from the story of Eicha in the Churban, where the Jewish people wanted to overcome the angels and in this way to prevent the destruction of the temple, right? What does it mean, an angel of fire, an angel of water? What it means is that Hashem assigns spiritual powers to govern certain laws of nature. There is a spiritual structure that governs the physical reality. This is Teva. They are assigned to it, they do their job, they always do it the same way, there are no decisions to make here, go straight the way they were assigned to. The knowledge of these angels and how they function, Hashem gave to the children of Keturah. But he sent them away from Yitzchak, because Yitzchak is a different reality. Yitzchak is a being, and all his children after him, including us, is a being that his focal point in life is spirituality. And when the focal point is spirituality, the Mesilas Yeshorim says that when a person focuses on what he is supposed to focus and grows spiritually, he carries the whole world with him. And when he makes the wrong decisions, he brings the whole world down. That's how we hear in the Mabul that Hashem destroy the animals, the plants. Why? Because when men went down levels, they went down levels too. What means, in other words, we were given a choice to make our focal point physicality or spirituality. And this choice is in front of every human being. Every Jew, I'm sorry, in front of every Jew. What is my focal point, physicality or spirituality? A person who will make physicality his focal point will find himself using spirituality for the sake of physicality. That's the whole concept of lo lishma, right? Like giving charity in order to be known and famous or get power. Now, it has room in the process. We don't negate it fully. We say a person should study with ulterior motives shelo lishma. In the end, he'll get to lishma. But there is a precondition here. Why do we do it? If a person gives tzedakah for recognition, and he doesn't realize that it's not good, and he doesn't make it as a goal to grow out of it, he might stay there. And then, that's not what the Torah wants. It's okay if at the moment we are there and we understand that we have to grow and we use this incentive as a springboard for giving tzedakah the way Hashem wants us to give. Okay? So Hashem recognizes, he gave us the ability to make our focal point spirituality only, and this gives us the ability to transcend our own nature and to transcend nature in general. What the Jewish nation have done all along as a nation and individuals in the Jewish nation to one extent or another all along. Right? But the same way that he gave us this ability, he gave us also the ability to go the other direction. And then we will use spirituality for the sake of physicality. The very recognition that we have this ability might be our springboard for doing it. If I know that, yes, physicality means a lot for me in many different areas. I'm definitely not Avraham Avinu, not Yitzchak, not Eliezer, and not Rivka. But I know that I have in me the capacity that came really from them. Where do I have it from? From Avraham and Rivka, from Avraham and Sarah, from Yitzchak and Rivka, and so on. I have the capacity in me. So I shouldn't be discouraged by where I am now. But it will give me the ability and the strength and the courage and the knowledge of how to, in terms of taking my focal point and making it slowly, slowly, more the will of Hashem. And the moment I take steps towards it, even if it's minor, small steps, I am already in the footsteps of Avraham, Sarah, Yitzchak and Rivka, and all the other people who live their life like this.